Good afternoon. I'm Bob Kruger with Thought for Food for February of 2022. This program is heard on the third Wednesday of the month at 4 p.m. and repeated on the third Saturday of the month at 3 p.m. It's intended for a blind or print-impaired audience, but hopefully it'll be of interest to everyone. Days to remember this month begin with National Freedom Day on the 1st and Groundhog Day on the 2nd. The USO was created on February the 4th of 1940, and the Boy Scouts of America were founded on the 8th in 1910. Our two tallest presidents were born in February, Mr. Lincoln on the 12th and Mr. Washington on the 22nd. Not only were they tall in stature, they were presidents during time that called for great leadership. The historic raising of the flag on the island of Iwo Jima took place on February 23, 1945, and February 18th is National Caregivers Day, and with the burden that the COVID pandemic has placed on caregivers, it's fitting and proper for us to pause and say thank you to our nation's caregivers. We knew that there'd be a problem arising during the year of 2022, but this was unexpected, a global potato shortage. And we ask, well, how could that be? This is unexpected. And the common potato, this is a problem for a planet addicted to French fries and chips. A number of popular food items, including Marmite and cream cheese, have faced scarcities amid supply chain disruptions brought about by the coronavirus pandemic and extreme weather. Potatoes are the latest to join the list, becoming unevenly available in some countries and fast food chains because of a number of factors. In Japan, the McDonald's locations stopped offering large and medium French fry orders late in December after pandemic-related supply chain issues and floods in the port of Vancouver delayed potato shipments. Days later, South Africa's leading maker of potato chips warned that potatoes were in disturbingly low supply after a bad force and excessive rains led to low local yields on top of global sourcing shortages. In Kenya, in January, Kentucky Fried Chicken locations took French fries, known locally as chips, from their menus as virus-related shipping delays held up containers full of potatoes for over a month. You love your chips a little too much, and we've run out, KFC Kenya tweeted on January 3rd. Sorry. In the meantime, the chain offered customers the chance to swap for other menu items, chicken, buns, soda, coleslaw, and maize-related ugali in place of fries in combo meals. Other Kenyan fast food restaurants were able to offer the goods. We have enough fries for everyone, Kenya's Burger King wrote in a January 4 Instagram post. Beyond the inconvenience, the shortage attracted some anger among Kenyans over KF's reliance on imported potatoes instead of local potatoes, which are in their harvest season now. KFC's chief executive for East Africa told Kenya's Business Daily newspaper that it could not easily switch to Kenyan potatoes because of global quality standards. All suppliers need to go through the global quality assurance approval process, and we cannot bypass that even if we run out, to ensure that our food is safe for consumption by our customers, he said. Some call for a KFC boycott on social media and ask why the franchise had sought approval for local suppliers from the start. The National Potato Council of Kenya's chief executive told local media that the country's farmers produce 62 varieties, and with the proper arrangements and proper planning, they could supply KFC. Pandemic or no, potato shortages crop up from time to time because of bad weather, blights, or labor disputes. China, Russia, India, and the United States are the world's top potato producers. But last year, U.S. farmers had to destroy a glut of millions of potatoes after lockdowns and stay-at-home orders led to a steep decline in demand, including from restaurants. The U.S. potato crop declined by 2%, according to a November report from the USDA. Japan is the United States' largest overseas market for potatoes, according to the USDA. Japan has more than 3,000 McDonald's outlets and relies on potatoes grown in the United States and sent by ship from North America. McDonald's in Japan said it's considered flying in potatoes to meet the demand as the backup in Vancouver is resolved. But after heavy snow in early January, further delaying shipments, the company announced it would be sticking with its small order maximum for at least another month. The potato may be commonplace, but plays a big part in people's appetites. We've discussed before the increasing demand for boneless chicken breasts, both at home and in fast food restaurants, short supplies, and increasing cost of chicken wings and breasts are leading restaurants to add thighs and other dark meat, poultry to menus and entrees, long overshadowed by more coveted and profitable products like breasts and tenders. Less loved portions like thighs and legs have for years been directed toward export market and lower profile venues. Amid a national supply crunch that has doubled breast meat prices in 2021, sent wing prices to record levels, and left some suppliers short on both, thighs have fresh appeal for most meat companies and restaurant operators. Poultry producer Purdue Farms has seen a 15% increase in boneless thigh sales in 2021 and a 20% increase in ground chicken, which is made of mostly dark meat, the company said. That demand has been spectacular, said Mark McKay, president of Fresh Poultry and Meats at the Salisbury, Maryland-based company. Products like thighs have two advantages for restaurants struggling with the high cost of breast and tenders. They're cheaper and easier to get, industry officials say. Boneless, skinless chicken breast, the poultry industry's flagship product, was priced at under $1 a pound in late December of 2020. Now it's more than $2 a pound, according to market research firm Underberry. Thighs, meanwhile, cost about 54 cents a pound compared with 26 cents a pound a year earlier, according to this research firm. Mention of thighs are growing on U.S. menus, though they remain rare. Around 2% of U.S. menus feature chicken thighs, according to the industry research firm Technomic Incorporated. In comparison, 42% of menus list traditional chicken wings. At Wing It On, a 10-unit chain specializing in chicken, executive developed a plan to diversify its poultry supplies as prices soared. Matt Ancero, the CEO of the Raleigh, North Carolina business, said he realized that while wings were coveted among restaurants, suppliers still had the rest of the bird to sell, making his business account less attractive than other restaurant operators who bought more parts of the chicken. You think the anatomy of a bird in the wing itself is only 10%. That leaves 90% of the bird that producers need to find a home for, Mr. Ancero, who estimated his chicken prices have climbed more than 200% from the spring of 2020. In late 2020, Mr. Ancero said, he approached suppliers with a whole bird strategy. He would figure out ways to use more parts of the bird if they would give him better terms. They agreed, and Mr. Ancero started selling thigh wings in addition to the chain's traditional offerings late last spring. Customer demand was a trickle in the beginning, and he often gave the item away in order to get customers to try them. Wing It On priced the new products at a discount to traditional wings, even though they had more than twice the meat. Roughly 7 months later, national chains Wingstop Incorporated launched a Thighstop brand centered on chicken thigh products. The chain enlisted rapper and Wingstop restaurant owner Rick Ross to promote the dark meat alternative, tweeting a photo of Mr. Ross reading a newspaper with the headlines, "Wing Shortage." "We also believe we can make thighs the center of the plate item," CEO Charles Morrison said in November. Mr. Ancero said Wing It On's thigh business shot up 40% after Wingstop started into the thigh business. Wing It All On also sells white meat tenders and nugs. That's N-U-G-G-Z, which are boneless chicken pieces. And he said the chains buys about every part of the chicken but the legs. Fast casual restaurants such as a Modern Market Eatery and Just Salad started adding thighs to their menus in the late 2020s, pitching products as something different and more flavorful. Chicken thighs are all about flavor, said Nick Kenner, Just Salad CEO. He said more customers are choosing the product rather than New York-based chains' chicken breast offerings. Chicken suppliers are gearing up to sell more thighs and other dark meat products to U.S. restaurants and grocery stores, said Tyson Food CEO Donnie King in August. Mr. King said the demand for the company's boneless dark meat chicken products is growing. He said the company's automated capabilities for deboning dark meat is increasing. The increased use of thighs and boneless dark meat chunks gives food service operators an alternative to wings and breast meat, the Tyson County's spokesperson reported. And for all these years, the thigh has been my favorite piece of chicken. The Chapel Hill building that housed the beloved Spanky's restaurant has been sold, making way for a new brand of chicken fingers on Franklin Street. The fast food chain, Raising Cane, purchased the downtown Brockwell building at the corner of Franklin and Columbia Streets in December. The Louisiana-based chicken company paid $876 million for the building, according to Orange County property records. The building also included a 23-year-old Starbucks cafe, and that cafe will remain open. The larger restaurant space most recently was occupied by Lula's, a southern concept built around fried chicken. The Chapel Hill Restaurant Group opened Lula's in June of 2018, but closed it in June of 2020, one of the many restaurants claimed by the pandemic. Mark Sloan, whose family has owned the building since the 1960s, said the restaurant's closing plus the 2 years of being vacant told them the time had come to let go of the building. We felt like the timing was right. Raising Cane's is willing to invest in the building and make it shiny and new. Raising Cane's, whose customers known as Caniacs, has more than 500 locations, mostly in the Midwest and the Southwest. And the brand's native Louisiana, Raising Cane's is exclusively a chicken finger restaurant with crinkle-cut fries and coleslaw, according to an online menu. At 120 years old, the Brockwell building stands as a Chapel Hill time capsule, built from clay bricks dug up to make Columbia Street. Mr. Sloan said it's been an ice skating rink, a grocery store, a theater, a drugstore, and a number of restaurants. Soon it will be the Triangle's first Raising Cane's location. A date of an opening has not been revealed. My siblings and I grew up in that building. We have a deep connection to it, Mr. Sloan says. I learned how to work a cash register there when I was a boy. We feel like Raising Cane is a good fit for downtown. There are two Raising Cane locations in North Carolina, one in Greenville near East Carolina University, and one in Jacksonville near the Marine Corps base at Camp Lejeune. Mr. Sloan called the intersection of Franklin and Columbia Street the cardinal location in Chapel Hill. But in recent years, it has been a corner of struggle. Along with Luna's, two pizzerias have closed there during the pandemic. Lots of pizza and Mid-Sea Seafood Destiny Express, a Greensboro-based food truck, had a soft opening in early January for their soulful soul food restaurant in the former Lots of Pizza space. A soft opening is an established opening without any advance advertising. The arrival of Raising Cane continues the trend on Franklin Street toward fast casual and fast food businesses. It will move into a crowded chicken market. Within a few blocks, the chicken wing scene includes popular local spots like Heavenly Buffalo's, Dame's Chicken and Waffles, and the Korean fried chicken chain Bonchon. Mr. Sloan said downtown is a different world compared to Sloan's drug, soda fountain, and pharmacy he used to work in as a kid. Nothing stays the same. There's a lot of forces at work that are larger than an individual. We would have loved to have been able to hold on to the building and find a mom-and-pop business that wasn't a national chain, but that didn't work out. Raising Cane's will breathe new life into the building and be a catalytic venture, hopefully spurring on other businesses. Starbucks Corporation is requiring its U.S. employees to be vaccinated against COVID-19 or submit to regular testing. One of the first large restaurant chains to take such a step ahead of potential federal vaccination mandates for large employers. Starbucks said earlier in the new year that workers in its U.S. cafes, offices, and manufacturing plants must be vaccinated by February 9th or get tested weekly. Workers who chose testing must get a pharmacist or a doctor to administer it instead of taking one at home, and workers will need to themselves obtain and cover any costs for the tests, the company said to its U.S. stores. U.S. workers must disclose their vaccination status by January 10th, Starbucks said. The company had previously allowed baristas to report their vaccination status on a volunteer basis. Starbucks CEO John Culver wrote in a message to employees in late December that he understands that workers have a range of views on vaccination. But Mr. Culver said Starbucks is strongly urging all workers to get vaccinated, particularly as the Omicron variant spreads. My responsibility and that of every leader is to do whatever we can to keep you safe and to create the safest work environment possibly, he wrote in a letter. Starbucks is one of the first U.S. restaurant groups to say it will comply with the mandates and to outline an approach. Many restaurants are struggling to hire and retain workers, and owners have said they fear the mandate will scare off prospective employees. They're also struggling to fully staff as the Omicron variant causes more cases among employees. Starbucks said in a separate message to its U.S. stores recently that it's experiencing more instances of COVID-19 exposure cases and self-isolation among its workforce. The company says it's extending referral bonuses paid to baristas for recommending hourly workers to $200 from $50 through April the 3rd. Mr. Culver told employees in his message that the company explored many options, including experimenting with COVID-19 testing in one market before coming up with this plan requiring vaccination or ongoing testing. Starbucks will hold sessions with employees to discuss the requirements in coming weeks, he said. There is no perfect option, and every scenario has its own complexities, he wrote. We can only wait to see how this action plays out. But before Starbucks started this new program, they decided to wait for a period of time before starting to implement. After much debate, Starbucks has delayed starting this program. A 321 Coffee, a cafe and coffee roaster that exclusively employs people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, is opening a new storefront location in downtown Raleigh. The coffee shop will open this spring at 615 Hillsborough Street in the Block 83 courtyard near Char Grill. It will feature a full coffee menu with light food offerings and roasting specials. 321, which won the News and Observer's Triangle Coffee Bracket last November, has run a modest operation at the Raleigh's Farmer Market since 2019. Its owners, Lindsay Reggie and Michael Evans, started the company 2 years earlier with a mission to expand employment opportunities for people with IDDs. The coffee shop 321 refers to the Down syndrome, which some of its employees have. That disorder is caused by a third copy of the 21st chromosome. Really, what we stand for is lifting up the individuals with disabilities and helping them be a recognized and valued part of the workforce, she said. So we're really proud of how we integrate people with different abilities into different parts of the operation. And I think it's really going to show itself fully at the storefront. The downtown shop will be 321's third location. The company plans to open its second shop in February as a part of Pendo's new Raleigh high-rise. That coffee bar will only serve Pendo employees. 321 Coffee employs about 30 members of the IDD community as farmers market stall, but more than 50 are on a waiting list for future job opportunities. Ms. Renge and Mr. Evans hope that 321 can expand to employ them all. Our goal is that the storefront will be open 7 days a week, she said, so there should be more opportunities to get more people in. The company hopes to open another Triangle location in late summer, she added, and a dedicated roastery is in the works. 321 is also partnering with Oatly, a milk substitute manufacturer, to secure an all-electric coffee truck. First and foremost, our goal is to give current employees the hours they fully want, Mr. Evans said. But soon we hope to have the bandwidth to open up more opportunities. Eventually, they anticipate hiring more than 100 people with different abilities. It will take similar effort from their peers in the business world to undo the inequitable hiring standards that have stymied the IDD community. They say, I think our goal is ultimately to do right by our staff and help them reach their goal, Mr. Evans said. For some, that might be full-time with a sports team or an industry or owning their own business. And so we hope we can be the pipeline to help people reach their dreams. With the added visibility of 321's new location, Ms. Renge hopes the company's ideology will spread. It puts us in the heart of downtown and so many businesses. We think it might start a chain reaction. In these uncertain days, this is an inspiring story. Here's a problem that all parents face at one time or another. It's been so long since I faced that problem, I've forgotten what we did to promote healthy eating. Many parents say, my kids are picky eaters. How can I get them to try healthier foods? Experts tell us that picky eating, especially between 2 and 4 years of age, is very common. It can cause a lot of mealtime conflict with parents highly interested in their children eating their vegetables and children highly invested in refusing to do so. Recognizing that pickiness is normal and usually short-lived can make mealtimes more comfortable. A low-key approach to picky eating can help youngsters come around and try a wider variety of foods. Here are some basic strategies to try. Whenever possible, eat family meals together and model healthy and adventurous eatings. Children often watch and adapt habits from their parents, older siblings, and peers. When the rest of the family eats well-balanced meals that include fruits and vegetables, children are more likely to do the same. Follow regular and structured meal and snack time, and make a rule that kids sit at the table to eat free of distractions and devices. Let your child choose what and how much to eat from what's offered, but avoid offering separate meals or snacks. If they refuse to eat, include at least one food at meals and snacks that the child likes. Allow them to refuse a food, but offer it again later. It can take children 15 to 20 tries to like a new food. Repeated exposure may help a rejected food become a new favorite. Involve kids in helping to select, grow, and cook foods. The more engaged they are, the more likely they'll be to try the foods. Between 18 months and 2 years of age, many children start to show a dislike of unfamiliar foods, which is called neophobia. Go with the flow while making it a habit to eat family meals together. Resist the urge to force a child to eat or engage in mealtime battles, but don't cater to picky preferences either. Experts say that involving your children, regardless of age, in planning, preparing, and cooking meals will make them more likely to try a food they're not familiar with. And if at all possible, eat together as a family. I hope this has been helpful. What is there about downtown Durham that seems to attract new places and foods to eat? I asked this question when learning that a new bagel shop is planning to open. What began as a side hustle is now the newest soon-to-be bagel shop in Durham, Isaac's Bagels, a pandemic startup that began in a home kitchen and blossomed into 1,000 bagels a week. will move into Queenie's in downtown Durham as a Bagel residency. Owned by Isaac Herrion, Isaac Bagel was to open in January, selling bagels Saturdays and Sundays, along with sandwiches, coffee, and dozens to take home and eat later in the week. Isaac's Bagels started in Mr. Henron's neighborhood listserv, but then spread like wildfire. The first runs were baked in Mr. Henron's home kitchen, which maxed out at 150 bagels. Since moving baking to a commissary kitchen in Durham, Isaac's Bagel drops out about 1,000 bagels per week. He's also done some midweek pop-ups at the new Durham sandwich shop, Ideals, adding a lox and cream cheese sandwich to the sparse menu. Look for more at Queenie's. We're really excited by people's encouragement, he said. It would be a dream to have a bakery, but I'm super excited to have this collaboration. A circle of bread, boiled and baked, a few things are deceptively simple as a bagel. Over the course of a few months, well before his first imagined selling bagels, he made dozens of test batches. The first were dreadful, he said. But by batch 50 or so, Mr. Henrion felt he must be on to something. Isaacs has enjoyed a meteoric rise from a garden pop-up with an Instagram storefront to vestiges of a shop, he said. I just love bagels. A fresh bagel has just been out of the oven for about a half an hour. Most people don't get to experience that. I don't get tired of. The bagels themselves hit on the classics. A richly brown, plain, and blanketed version of poppy seed. Everything, salt and pepper, sesame, and onion. The cream cheeses are a bit less traditional, whipped and made from scratch flavors like plain burnt jalapeno, Szechuan chili oil, dill, and scallion, and fig and honey. The bagels are meant to be simple things, so we've intentionally had a limited menu, Mr. Henron said. So there are no chocolate and no sprinkles. The Queenie's residency is open-ended for Isaac's Bagels. If the residency goes well enough and Isaac's continue to grow, a future bake shop lingers as a possibility. For now, Durham's bagel lovers can find Isaac's downtown. There's not really a plan, he said. It's still a dream. We can only hope his dreams come true. Krispy Kreme is putting the dough in the donate. The national donut chain is giving away sweet treats to help combat the national blood shortage through the end of January. People who donate blood to the American Red Cross will get a free dozen original glazed donuts when they show their donation sticker or confirmation of the donation through the organization's donor app. The organization, which provides some 40% of the nation's blood supply, announced earlier it was experiencing the worst pandemic. We've run out of time for this episode of Thought for Food. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Bob Kruger, reading for the Carolina Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919 832